Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our service this morning. My name is Badri, and this is, of course, Shanti, and it's my great honor and privilege and humble joy to be with you, visiting, as it were, with a number of friends from Ananda Village, along with my wife, Gita, and our two young children, Tulsi and Jay. We're joining you not only for this service, but for the next wave Joy program, Joy Week, that we're having together. And it's been a wonderful time of service and time spent in divine friendship, meditation. Last evening, for those of you that were there on university, some beautiful outreach sharing Swamiji's powerful and uplifting music. So thank you for hosting us and for hosting me here today. And on then to today's topic of attunement and abiding in God. As Swamiji writes, Yogananda often emphasized this principle of attunement to disciples of this path and to anyone. And why? We can liken it to a string puppet that can be picked up from any one point, any several points, and simply be a jumble of sticks and strings. But picked up from that one single point on top, everything rather effortlessly falls into place. And there are few things in life and on the spiritual path that have that effect, and attunement is certainly one of them. Being in attunement with God and with the Guru has the power to bring us into attunement with anything and with everything. And so it really is that highest point we can pick things up by. Master Paramahansa Yogananda was once on a train, some of you may know this story, from New York to Los Angeles. And he was dressed in his orange robes, as you see him pictured sometimes, with his long hair and dark skin. As I understand, he didn't often go out in public this way. It caused somewhat of a scene. But on this occasion, he was this way, riding in an open car from New York to L.A., when a man was staring at him, rather scrutinizing and with a judgmental look. And finally, Yogananda said to this man, "What is it?" And the man said, "None of your business." And Yogananda replied, "Of course it's my business. I have to stare at your face staring at me." And so a discussion therein ensued, and Yogananda learned that this man was a movie actor. And Yogananda said, "Listen, everyone in this world is crazy." He said, "Your craziness is for movie acting, and mine is for self-realization." He said, "I know yours, but you do not know mine. Let us discuss." He said, "Fools argue, wise men discuss. Let us discuss, and if I'm convinced of your way of craziness, your way of life, I will become a movie actor. And if you're convinced, you'll become a student of self-realization." And who do you think won that discussion? He concludes the story saying, "And that is how I was saved from becoming a movie actor." And so we have this choice in life to be in attunement with God and the Guru, yes, but really, we're in attunement with something, with anything, whether it's movie acting or any number of the things of this world. And that craziness, that environment that we choose to be in, that attunement is what is the guiding principle in our lives. Swami Kriyananda wrote on the subject, or said rather, on the subject of attunement, that this loving soul contact is the essence of what Master came to bring into our lives. He said we can get spiritual understanding from books, but really it comes through that soul contact with the Guru. He said what we must try to do as disciples is to tune into Master's consciousness, his loving presence, and his guidance in every act of his lives. And when you think about it, or you review the life of a great disciple like Swami Kriyananda, he had the attunement, And the proof of that is in all of his life. But as his guru often emphasized to him, you have a great work to do, you have a great work to do. And even after his passing, his chief disciple, Rajarshi Janakananda, again stressing, you have a great work to do. No one ever told Swami how to do that work, or even what it was. And yet, he accomplished it. The proof is there in the worldwide communities, in the music, in the books, in the endless string of creativity that we know was Swami Kriyananda's legacy, and above all, in the thousands upon thousands of souls touched and awakened through that gift of his, of attunement with the Guru. And how did he do it? It was somewhat unique to his temperament as a disciple, as it is for each of us, but at the core of it, it was not. It comes down to the techniques and to devotion. And certainly there are many techniques, but I'll speak of what I know, and most of us know, the techniques of Kriya Yoga that have tremendous power to bring us into attunement with the Guru and with divine consciousness. But even the techniques, though in some ways essential, are not paramount. The devotion is what makes it work. It's what brings us into attunement and what brings the grace of God. There's a beautiful story from the life of the Buddha, where the Buddha is resting by the river with some of his disciples, his monastic disciples. And a woman approaches this group, and to the horror of these disciples, she casts herself upon their master, the Buddha, saying, "My beloved, I've come to you." And to their further shock and horror, the disciples witness their master saying to the woman in turn, "Oh, my beloved, you have come, but don't touch me now. Go away, and I will come to you soon." And the woman replies, "I say to you, my beloved," and you reply, "Beloved, how can you cast me out?" And again he replies, "Go away, my beloved, I cannot see you now." And so she goes. And so some time passes, years in fact, and the Buddha is seated in meditation, when again, to the horror of these disciples, he suddenly rises and says, "My beloved is calling, and now I must go to her." And he goes to the same place by the river, and the woman is there, the courtesan is there, and now she is laying sickly and dying, covered with smallpox sores, and no one will touch her or go near her. But the Buddha holds her in his arms, saying, "Now, my beloved, I have come." And through his touch and his blessing, she's healed and becomes a disciple of the master. And so, even through the misunderstanding of a devotee, of a disciple, the power of love and devotion is far greater to bring us into attunement than anything else. Sri Yukteswar Yogananda's guru said of divine love that it is without boundary, without change, and without condition. The flux of the human heart, he said, is transformed forever, banished forever, at the touch of transfixing pure love. And that's the love of the masters and of God that we have to develop in order to become in tune with God and with Guru. And so, back to the reading, this idea of attunement that, again, Yogananda stressed again and again, to be in tune. Be in tune. How can we do it? What are the practical steps to get there? Because that's what living the spiritual path is about. It's grounding these high ideals into our daily life. And there are two key excerpts from the reading today that Swamiji, I think, encapsulated it beautifully. He said we have to keep the presence of the masters in our hearts, and be sustained inwardly by God's presence. And again, to take it a step further, how do we do it? I'll give you an answer from my 3-year-old daughter, Tulsi. We discuss these things with some frequency, and really, oftentimes in the bathtub, she's in the tub, and I sit. We're talking about the nature of spirit and of God within us and everywhere. And so I kind of put her to the test, and I say, well, Tulsi, how do we get there? How do we find God? And she says, without hesitation, we can find him in our hearts, Daddy. And so I push my luck one step further, and I say, but how, Tulsi? How can we get there in our hearts? And she says, again, without hesitation, we can climb through our mouths. Climb, climb, climb. So, okay, that's one take on it. She can dish it as well as take it. But the answer is truly just there, in the heart. And it comes through practice, through devotion. When we tune into the power of a great master, any great master, but our guru, Yogananda, we find that there's tremendous power there. And he was not a man who lived and died and spoke and taught and wrote and lectured. He was simply the power of God. And that same power is always there for us to tap into. As Lahiri Mahashai said to Yogananda's mother before his birth, she said, your son will be like a mighty locomotive, and he will pull many, many souls to God. And we are on that train. We are going to God, being pulled by the power of our master. And Swami Kriyananda, too, is a great engine on that train. And each of us, in turn, can add our power to that locomotive through attunement and through devotion. And there's a story in India, a popular story of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, the holy or divine trinity aspects of God. And they were once boasting of their great powers together when a little boy appeared to them and said first to Lord Brahma, what do you do? And he said, I create everything. And he turned to the other gods, and the boy said, and what do you do? And they said, we preserve and destroy everything. And the boy was rather nonplussed, and he held up a little piece of straw, like a toothpick, and he said again to Lord Brahma, can you create this? And try as he might, Lord Brahma could not incredulously create this simple little artifact, and the straw began to dissipate in the boy's hand, and Brahma turned to Vishnu and said, quickly sustain that straw before it disappears. And again, he could not. And finally, the boy reproduced the piece of straw, turning to Lord Shiva, saying, can you destroy this? And again, he could not. And the boy at last turned to Lord Brahma again and said, did you create me? And Lord Brahma thought and thought, but he could not remember creating this amazing child. And in that moment, the child vanished. And each of the gods awoke from their delusion, realizing that a far greater power than even theirs sustains each of them and this entire cosmos and all of us. And that power is behind our master, behind Swamiji, behind the great ones, again, always lying in wait, just for us to pick up the banner of our devotion that brings attunement through our daily practices, through our dedication, through our service. We have to do everything with that power of God. It's not easy to do, but gradually we find there is tremendous joy and reward, not always outwardly, but that comes through this practice. There's another story from Master's life from his disciple, Dr. Lewis, when they were walking by the Hermitage in Encinitas, California, and Dr. Lewis would often receive spiritual instruction and inspiration this way from the master. And one evening they were walking along the bluff when Yogananda said, let us go in and get something to eat. And so in they went, and Yogananda cooked a simple meal of some vegetables that they enjoyed together, and they retired for the evening. And that night when Dr. Lewis went into his room, he had somewhat of an experience. He beheld a great light suffusing his room and his consciousness, and he felt very powerfully uplifted. And of this deep spiritual experience, he asked Yogananda in the morning, "What was that in my room last night?" And Yogananda replied, "Oh, I was pretty much in God when I cooked those vegetables." And so we can be in God, cooking vegetables, serving in church, being with our family, being at work, driving through traffic. We can simply be in tune by being with God, sustained inwardly by His presence, and living consciously in the presence of the Masters. Yogananda often quoted the Bible again: "As many as received Him, to them gave He the power to become the sons of God." And the word that jumped out to me, at least with respect to this idea of attunement, is to receive. To receive the power of God implies no tension, a simple openness, a receptivity. I thought the chants were very timely this morning, chanting Om Guru, keeping the presence of the Masters, and rest in God. And the idea that we simply need to relax and receive. It's not all about striving and tension and willpower, although those things have their place. Willpower, certainly. It's about receiving God's presence on the altar of our hearts. And then we can act. But there has to be that sense of offering. Attunement, above all, means, as I've said, loving God, how we approach God in any given moment. As Yogananda said, it's the minutes and not the years that really matter. And so it's not only acknowledging God's presence, but giving our devotion, giving of ourselves fully in each moment. Once when Yogananda was receiving devotees in a line, a disciple, Brother Anandamoy, was observing as each disciple or devotee approached. And he saw a man rather incredulously approach Yogananda. He said it looked like this man was on drugs. And he had a lifeless look in his face. And as he knelt before Master, he held out a limp hand. And Anandamoy observed Yogananda, like a flawless mirror, take on a lifeless look and reach out his hand very limply to grasp the man's hand and let him go. And as the young man departed, he looked back at the next approaching master, and it was a lifelong devotee. And as the woman knelt before Master with love and reverence for her guru, he warmly blessed her with great devotion and grace, and it was palpable. And even this young man, looking back, could see this. And so what did he do? He went around to the receiving line again to try to get such a blessing from the Master. And this is perhaps the most amazing part of the story to me. He again approached the Master with lifeless look and lifeless touch. And what did Master do? He responded in kind with a lifeless look and lifeless touch. And it was no prejudgment on the part of Master. He was simply meeting the man at the level that he was able to receive. And so in each moment, we are like, well, maybe somewhere in between, but probably more like that woman, that lifelong devotee, yearning for truth, for awakening, for spiritual understanding, and offering ourselves at the feet of the Guru. He doesn't assess where we're at. He simply responds in kind. Are we loving? Are we joyful? Are we open to receiving His blessing? And so finally, this idea of attunement comes down not to an either-or proposition, are we in tune or are we not? But in that given moment at the feet of the Master, are we loving? Are we open? Are we joyful? There's one final story I'd like to share with you personally, because it has to be made personal on the spiritual path. The stories of Master and of Swamiji are beautiful, but I would bet that every devotee in this room and on the spiritual path sincerely has experiences and personal stories that have made it real for them, because why else are we in it? So this idea of attunement, thinking of God, loving God, and acting rightly in all circumstances. Master said there are many rats and mice living in the canyon at Mount Washington in his time, but they are not making spiritual progress. We have to make the effort. And so this story is a few years back in 2014, when my wife and I, living near Ananda Village, we had purchased a nearby property. And it was about 5 acres of land adjacent to Ananda Village outside Nevada City. And it was a large house that we spent quite a bit of time and energy remodeling. And anybody who's ever tuned into or owned or worked on property knows just what a challenge it can be to do these things. And so we were remodeling, working with infrastructure. And from the very beginning, my wife and I, being devoted and dedicated to this path, affirmed that this was not our house. We purchased it because it felt right and it was an opportunity that seemed right, but this was Master's house. This was an ashram. This was something we could offer in service to others, and we did. We had many friends living with us. It was an ashram, and we wanted to always consciously look for how it could serve and what was the right next step. And so throughout this process of remodeling, of working, it was at the time of our daughter's birth, so she was an infant that year. It was challenging. It was quite a bit of money. It was quite a bit of work, and just the kind of the humdrum of what it takes to work on the physical plane. But there was joy in it, certainly. So it was in the summer of 2014, about this time, that the well supplying our property went dry. And as most of you know, we've had this severe drought in California, broken a little bit this year, but the last 5 or so years. So this wasn't a totally unique thing, but it's a big deal. The only well supplying our property went dry. And so amidst all of this other kind of cacophony, we had to spend the next several months working with infrastructure from a neighboring property to bring us temporary drinking water. You can't have a house without water. Our family there and three other people living there at the time in this large home. And we also had to excavate and move a large septic tank in order to have the well drillers come to assess and drill our well. So amidst all of this, again, we're praying rather somewhat desperately now. What do we do? What's trying to happen here? We can't really afford to deal with this, but we have to. Our plan was to try to get water supplied to the property somehow and to sell our land. But again, we're tuning in to Master, to God. What do you want of this? What's the lesson? What's the way forward? And so I worked closely with the well drilling company who came out to assess our situation. Your well is dry. It's a 300-foot hole. There's no water. So we drilled deeper. And just to put it in perspective, 300 feet is a moderately deep well in our area. So they drill at a significant cost per foot. Large crane truck comes out, drills down another 100 feet, 200 feet, 300 feet more. And now we're at a 600-foot well, which is rather deep, and still no water. In fact, throughout this process, they're assessing, and it doesn't look very good. And at 600 feet, they explained to me that they've hit what they termed a void in the well. And there's not only no water there, but we can't drill any deeper because we're unable to use our equipment and our instruments to measure what's going on and how to go forward. So essentially, they offered me a dry hole price, that was the term, and said, you get the dry hole price if you drill another well with us, because what else are we going to do? So again, now if we were somewhat desperate, we're very desperate. We're praying. We're looking for the silver lining or the blessing or the way forward. I walked the property. They brought their manager or their well site guy out, and we walked the property to decide where could we punch a new well. We're way out of our budget if we ever had one now, but this is what we have to do, and this is the next step. So we're practical as well as praying desperately. We landed on a location up the hill nearby where we could drill a well. Not sure how to pay for it and all that, but that's what we're going to do. As I walked down the driveway to the old well site, I heard a noise coming from what's essentially a pipe sticking out of the ground that encompasses a whole well with some infrastructure. There's air, it turns out, coming out of the pipe, and it's creating a hissing sound. And so I called the well drillers over, and I said, what's this? And they said, we don't know. We've never seen that before. And so as we removed the cap off the pipe, you can feel warm air coming out of the pipe, and you can actually hear the sound of water and smell water coming from 600 feet below the earth. And what we learned essentially happened is that we had hit like an underground river under our property, 600 feet down, and we could pump water from that. And it was really good water, and it would sustain our property indefinitely. So with some more expensive testing and infrastructure, boom, there's our new well. And this was remarkable for the obvious reason that we went from no well and big problems to solution and well, but also because we didn't lose our cool. I mean, I said we were desperate, and that isn't a totally untruth, but we kept praying. We kept accepting that this was our fate, but also offering it up. Swami Kriyananda has said, we have to accept things as they are before we can fully offer them to God. And we did that. You know, we were desperate, but we said, it's just money, it's just property, it's just what's being given to us, and there's a way forward. And so we forged that way through our practicality and through our faith. And the outcome was what it was. We could sell the property. It wasn't a total loss. In fact, we gained a little and were able to create a rather positive outcome from that experience. But the underlying principle, no pun intended, is that God's love is there. It's sometimes his blessing is there like an underground river. And we may not know it. It might be 600 feet down. But in every circumstance, in every situation in life, bar none, God's blessing and grace is there. And as Yogananda said, to those who think me near, I will be near. And so for each of us, it comes down to, in any given moment or circumstance, are we tuning in, keeping that presence? Because through the Guru's presence and through being sustained inwardly by God, he has the power to make each of us, through our attunement, nothing less than one with God.